Amagwini ithokozani emakhosini. Igama lam nguzipho wakwaKudolamo elokugula nguMayihlome. Xa uthanda ungandibiza ngoGumayihlome okanye ngoGonyazi lweZulu. Bendizothanda uthatha eli thuba ndicamagushe kuzo zonke izihlweli ezindiphetheyo eziphakathi komzimba wam endilibeleyo okanye endingazibizanga ngoku zingaqumbi iziqalekisi. Ndiqale ngocamagusha emabheleni, emkolanga odlambulo oqunta ovaphi onondanda kuphakanyiswa, ndiyacamagusha. Ndicamagushe emazizini olamyeni omtatela ongxibinoboya. Ndicamagushe kombathane oxesibe, ndingawalibelanga mampinga owawa obholokoqoshe. Camagushe kwisihlwele sandiphehlelelayo sandibekibhekile entloko, nditsho kuthiyani uzengele unonkosi xa ndisitsho ndicamagushe. Camagushe ke kwisihlwele sotholo ondlangisa, ndicamagushe kootida ongcwangule. Camagushe kwisihlwele sandifundisa uphakama isidlozi, njalo ndithokozise kubaba wam uMamntambo kaNhlangothe, ngithi thokoza gogo. Ndithokozise kugogomkhulu wami uMapitsi kaMahoto, ndithi bayethe makhosi amakhulu, makhosi ezizwe. Ndiyacamagusha.
Thokozani and welcome to episode 23 of Gogo Have I Been Scammed, brought to you by Times Live. On this platform, we discuss, share wisdom, and raise awareness on all things traditional African spirituality and indigenous knowledge, including but not limited to scams. My name is Gogo Zipho Dolamo, and I am your host. Welcome to today's episode of Gogo Have I Been Scammed, where we dive into the stories behind groundbreaking innovations shaping the future of the continent. Today, we're exploring a fascinating intersection of tradition, spirituality, and technology, how modern tools are helping preserve and promote ancient practices that have been cornerstones of African cultures for generations. In a world where technology is seen as such a force, our guest today has harnessed it to bridge the gap between the past and the present. Imagine an app that can not only connect you to traditional healthcare, but honors the traditions of African healing. Our guest is a visionary behind the app and is helping people connect with traditional healers near them. Whether you're seeking spiritual guidance, herbal remedies, or a simple connection to your roots, this app is making it so much easier to gain access and wisdom as well as knowledge. We're thrilled to have you today, Lebo. Thank you so much for joining us and also forever shaping, innovation and I suppose groundbreaking innovation in the traditional African space. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Zipo. Thank you for having me here. I think this is one of the platforms that I truly did admire, and I did see myself one day hopefully being on a platform, on this platform, because again, we're sort of aligned, connecting technology and spirituality. Who would have known that one day there'd be a podcast discussing all things African spirituality, and on the podcast speaking about an application that connects all things spirituality. It really shows the power of where we are today, yet staying true and remaining to who we were before, but just combining those two essences to ensure that we build a great platform for Black people and for African people going forward. So yeah, thank you for having me, and thank you for these two platforms collaborating and hopefully creating something beautiful for the people.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. I think let's get right into it. Let's speak a little bit about the background. What inspired you? What got you to this point? Yokuthi uzowakha i-app yezangoma, of all things.
So for me, right, it was the intersection between the growth of spirituality, not just in South Africa, but across the globe, and the lack of access to it. A lot of people fear is the wrong word. There's a unfortunate bias and stigma around African spirituality, and that in its essence has created a lack of access to it, right? And for those who have access, it's incredibly secretive, it's incredibly hidden. And for those who want to gain access, there's a lot of fear barriers and fear mongering around it, So I found myself wondering, in essence, why? I mean, if you look on your phone stores and you search Bible, Quran, whatever, you'll find 10 million apps will pop up at the same time. But if you look for anything spirituality, especially African spirituality, that knowledge, and not just on our app stores, even on the internet, is difficult to come by. You know, it's really written by people who have a passion for African literature, but it's not so mainstream that really everybody can access it. It has to be people who are deeply invested in the practices and the culture that actually get to that information. But again, I felt like it shouldn't be that difficult. And people always tell me like, yo, I'm so glad that you actually created this app because I've been looking for traditional healers, but I don't know where to find them. I'm somewhat intimidated by going to their places. So if I can do it from the comfort of my home on my phone, that's a bonus for me. So yeah, I thought that a platform like this would be a good way to introduce spirituality to people, the essence around it, how it, inverted commas, works, you know, the benefits of it, and just the information, just give me more information around it. I think that's the most important part for me, is just constantly educating people about spirituality, constantly evolving spirituality, and again, just helping to bring spirituality to the forefront of the world.
Look, I think I love what you said about us doing similar things, right? Because I think when Demi and I conceptualized Gogo, right, it was about sort of destigmatizing and doing the work to destigmatize traditional African spirituality, which, as you've said, is a big thing in our communities. I mean, there's apps for everything, as you said. There's even tarot reading apps, right? So spirituality definitely is moving in that direction. And we just need to catch up, right? How did you come about it, right? Is there a history from in terms of your family? Did you grow up very traditional African spiritualist? Or did you follow a similar journey as most of us? And I say when a similar journey is that most of us are raised in the church, right?
Yeah.
And then somehow some of us are fortunate enough to have parents that become woke at some point and they realize that actually, hey, we might not have been doing the most perfect thing here. So can you tell us a bit about your history and how, you know, it got us here?
Yeah. So I had best of both worlds. I was raised in the church, Lutheran, but but my father also constantly instilled in us African practices. At a young age, I really didn't see what was going on, so I was still more focused on the church. But as you get older, and bless my older brother also, because he kept instilling in me, especially when I got to university, he's like, dude, you may be leaning more towards the church side, but know that there's this African side, and people at the university could be strong on that side, and you don't know how it's going to affect you, you know? So as I got older, I started to, investigate, like, how does this actually work? What is the balance here? And for me, the essence of it was, the two can exist in one. It doesn't mean that by abandoning the church or by choosing spirituality, I'm abandoning the church. But it doesn't mean that by choosing the church, I'm abandoning spirituality as well, right? So I was like, if I can be at peace and find common ground between the two and find and have the two run parallel, then for me, it's okay. And in that, right, I found myself saying, with this journey that we're taking, with these steps that I'm taking to, again, better myself, because for me, it was more of an exercise and a finding journey. And I was like, why is spirituality such a frail and fragmented thing amongst Black people? And I think the bigger question was just how, again, Black people really don't have any power over this field that they started. You know, this was our practice. This was our contribution to the world and the world's spirituality. But we truly have no play. Again, like most parts of this country's economy, we truly have no play. You know, everyone speculates on how much the informal traditional healing and spirituality market generates into this country's economy. But if you can look at all traditional healers, if you look at people that sell traditional medicines, they're struggling as any other Black person is, you know. So I was like, why can we not find a way to bring this economy into the mainstream? And I found myself saying, if you can bring a platform that can connect healers I mean, if we have circa 200,000 healers in this country, but a population of 60 odd million, if the census is right, 60 odd million, let's bring that down to maybe 40 million adults. Of that 40 million adults, if 20 million are consulting, it's a big number, you know, it's a big number. But again, we're opening up the market not just for South Africa, but for Africa, for the globe, you know. We're creating access to spirituality. And that really was the essence of it, is that I've been fortunate enough to be raised in a home where I have access to such. Not everyone is. So how do you bring access to people who have no idea and no bounds as to where to even lift the rocks to start looking for these things?
Definitely. And I think I love what you say about the research, right? There's a lot of speculation about, you know, how much the traditional African market rakes in, down to the number of doctors that we have as well, right? Down to the statistical sort of measure of how many people or how many African people rely on the use of traditional healers as well as allopathic medicine. I mean, they've even coined a term called medical pluralism, right? That you rely on different medical systems and the plurality of medicine, particularly as African people, to get the optimum sort of, you know, healthcare, right? And to get you there.
And that's what it is, right? At the end of the day, it's healthcare. We follow, and I think what was a real turning point for me was COVID. Because during COVID, we really saw, especially Black people, going back to, for lack of a better words, raw herbs. For raw herbs, you know. Yes, the things that we get in the pharmaceutical packages are, there's some traces of herbs and stuff in there, but people went back to their roots, and I'm using that pun intended. They went back to the roots. You know, people are boiling umhlonyana. I don't know what that is in English, but they were
Wormwood, wild
wormwood, yes,
wormwood,
wild worm.
yes.
People are boiling this stuff and drinking it just to prevent themselves from getting sick. And that's why you're like, okay, we actually have had the answers for a very long time, but why do we have the answers but the capacity to not actually benefit from these answers that we have? We seem to always be lagging in the I don't want to say capturing, but in the final instance of actually using what information we have to critically benefit not just us, but generations that follow us. Because if things like wormwood were, umhlonyana were known to fix cures, and I mean they were known because something came up, people knew what to use. These things have been around. Why has that information not been passed around from our great grandmother to the current grandchildren, you know, so that they are able to, if we are, inverted commas, a smarter generation now, so we're able to exploit more technologies and more things to make use of the things that we have naturally in our country.
Certainly, yeah.
Exactly. So in the same breath, it's like, okay, guys, how do we then bring more value to our economy as Black people? And let's really see what we can do with this economy that we have.
I also think, look, when we look at South Africa's history of pandemics, right, right back to HIV, there was a huge necessitation towards also African and traditional remedies, right? It's almost as if when humanity doesn't have Western scientific answers,
They fall
we
back to
really
Africa.
retreat back. And I think it is in the best interests of us as well, and I suppose as future generations, to really try and capitalize that on that, as you're saying, that there is all of this rich body of knowledge. And at that, because there isn't mainstream knowledge, there is a little bit of danger in it as well. And
True.
one of the main arguments from Western or allopathic doctors that I really don't particularly love is how Western medicine is or rather African medicine is untested, and you know there are lots of risks and things associated. But in all honesty, if we can have medications with contraindications, I'm sure that we can take the same kind of ethos and apply it within an African sense, so that we know ukuthi masikunikeza umhlonyana and you have, for example, a kidney issue, let's regulate in A, B, and C,
So
right?
again, that's another part that's very interesting for me, right? And I think it's something that the Department of Health has been really struggling to do, especially with getting traditional healers on board, is how do you find that mix? How do you find that balance? Like you're saying, of tested and so forth. And in its essence, right, traditional healing is about, like I'm saying, healing. And you want to ensure that your patient is as well as can be after leaving you, you know? So, yeah, the theories of the medicines untested and so forth, I understand from a...
It's a lazy explanation.
That's what I'm saying. From a bureaucratic standpoint, I understand from a governmental view. But again, I put forth to the government that they really haven't helped the people in this industry actually get to those steps. It's easy to say your product isn't tested, but how much does it cost to actually lab test for health purposes a single route? You know, how much does it cost to implement intellectual property? Because at the end of the day, your Panado has intellectual property rights, your Nurofen, these things all have intellectual property rights. And for them to disclose what's in their products, they have IP protecting them. But for African traditional healers and African spirituality, we don't have the access to those facilities to actually do that.
Yeah.
So again, you want people to give of themselves and give of their knowledge, but their knowledge is power. Their knowledge is currency, it's value. But they have no means to also really capitalize and benefit from that value. And if you as a department are stepping in and not really having meaningful contribution to actually helping them extract the value from their knowledge, then there's always going to be friction. You'll never find a point where everybody is on one place. And until that is solved, it'll always be a matter of, it's not tested, it's not what. But circa, example, 20 million people are getting help from it, more so probably than Western medicine, you know. So it's not tested, but it's working.
But it's working, and people are, then it's a part of people's experience and lives on a daily basis, right? So, yeah, it's a contentious matter for me. It makes me very angry. but equally, look, it's not without a solution, right? Because in my looking at data and looking at research, right, I stumbled on a field called ethnobotany, right? And it's basically the study of African botanical plants, particularly used for medicinal purposes, right? Now, in those studies, there usually are some contraindications. So there is a starting point, right? There just isn't people doing it. But alas, I guess one of the points of having conversations like this and having platforms like this is to shape, I suppose, the future and in how we navigate the space going forward.
Yeah.
Let's talk about app development, right? How did that go? What were some of the challenges? How did you regulate that? How?
Sure. App development is very challenging. It's a very challenging space to delve in. They don't tell you about the millions of challenges, technical and non-technical. You never know about the challenges of working with people. You really don't know the challenges of working with people. But again, it's like a child, actually. It's like a child, you know. It's newborn. You have to cradle and feed it as much as you can, as much as they need to be fed. You change diapers. That's fixing glitches and problems that are going around in the application. And then it stars learning how to roll, starts learning how to sit up, starts learning how to crawl. From crawling, you're standing, from standing, you're walking, you know. And we're still far from walking, but we're coming into shape and we're really starting to learn how to sit up on our own and really find our feet so we're able to start crawling, you know. But yeah, app development has been a very interesting journey. It took much longer than anticipated. Again, due to unforeseen, exactly, right? we create timelines, we create plans, and then...
Also, you know your dose, Elena. You sometimes have to put that into context.
Yes,
but I suppose this is also a calling for you as well, right? You are fulfilling or playing your part.
Exactly. So again, it may not have been my time to actually do that. And again, those are things that you have to take into context and sort of come to terms and realization. Like say, okay, as much as I've conceptualized this, I've done this, but did you really, is it your will to take it forward? And in your taking it forward, you're not taking it forward alone. And I don't mean that in the sense of the physical beings next to you. It's you're taking it forward. But you back that are traveling with me from my mother and father's side. They're walking with me through this journey. They're walking with me through this journey, and they will not let me do things that they can see I'm not ready for or are not going to benefit me at that moment. So as frustrating as it can be, everything has its timing, and app development really taught me that everything has its timing, and patience is an essence in this world. It's a very big essence in this world. But other than that, it went well. I think the final product is something that that I envisioned. It is something that I really saw that encompassed the actual first prototype and demo that we did. It all started with a prototype and a demo. And no, honestly, it started with me designing Canva designs of what I wanted it to look like. So it really came together and it came to fruition in the way that I anticipated it. And I really am happy. I hope that when people actually receive it in their hands, they'll be as ecstatic, play around with the features, give us feedback if anything isn't working. We don't want people to download, create account, and then leave because something didn't work at the moment. It's technology, things will happen, things will break. But give us feedback so that we're able to better and enhance the experience. At the end of the day, this application that we created truly is created just for, it's created to help people. It's created for you who's never accessed spirituality, to access spirituality in the comfort of your home and then and better enable yourself in with your spiritual inclination. So please provide us feedback, please provide us with insights, and we'll carry on just developing a better and better app for you guys to use.
Of course, and I love that. I love that it's also has a little bit of input from us. Can you tell us just a little bit about the core features of the app? What would you say sets it apart from any other spiritual app or spiritual health related app?
So, in conceptualizing Goma, right, I primarily looked at what other kind of spiritual apps there are, and I found quite a few. But there's a lot of things that are amiss that really don't have the application in South Africa's context, right? And I think not just South Africa, but Africa's context. So one thing that I was like, okay, would it be a good key feature, again, going back to people's reluctance to actually go to a traditional healer's ndumba or place of work, I myself, I must say, when you go in there for the first time, it's quite an intimidating area. It's an intimidating aura. It's intimidating sense. There's a lot of things, it's like, whoa, it's overwhelming. So, and not saying that a, so before I get to that, so I took that into account. I was like, okay, how do you then take that situation and make a person's experience a bit less, first experience a bit less intense? And that's where we created the virtual consultation. Right, so that's one of our key features, is that you can consult virtually through the application with the healer of your choice, right? Everything is done in three simple steps. You search for a healer depending on what you want. You choose a time on their calendar, you book the slot, payment is processed. When your appointment is due, you get an alert and you go log onto the app and you get your consultation. So that was a very key thing. We're like, okay, we need to be able to have people consult virtually. But at the same time, it was key for us to allow those who want to, and those who may need to, rather, to book in-person consultations with the healers, right? And that again could be attributed to a variety of things. There's some things that must be done in person, and there's some things that that can be done virtually.
Virtually, of course.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, we need to give people that leeway and that access to, if they need to, they must. You can either consult virtually or you can consult physically. But again, the crux is, for accountability's sake on everyone's side, is to always transact through the platform.
The platform, yes.
This helps alleviate a lot of, it helps create a digital trail, which we can then use to assist in any case of anything that happens. You know, we really don't know what people's intentions really are.
Of course, we've
seen a lot of platform applications, your Ubers, your Airbnb, not so much, but your Ubers and so forth, that people, criminals and what are the words, unkind forces, really are using these platforms to target the users of these platforms, because you're at a vulnerable place, you know. So that's a key thing. So virtual consultation and in-person consultations, that's very important. A second key element for us was creating a central marketplace, right? When you're living in suburbia, it's difficult to find traditional medicine items.
Of course.
And it baffles me as to, one, why, and two, why do you have to travel? I mean, if you're staying in Johannesburg South, you have to travel to Johannesburg Central, 10, 15, 20 minutes.
I'm in Midrand, for example, Giza e Diagonal.
Exactly. You know, that's almost a 30-40 minute drive just to come get Impepo or some candles.
Or Iwash.
You know, and so it didn't make sense to me when you can have these things delivered to you.
Mm-hmm.
So again, now the key element is to rope in merchants who are willing to, again, transform their way with business.
Because
a lot of these merchants are
cash-based,
right?
Yes.
That's a very big challenge. Convert them from cash-based to application and account-based work. Not saying cancel your cash, but, you know, let's evolve and see how we can make this thing work. So, but creating that element of delivery and bringing these products to people from merchants and bridging that convenience factor there for people was a very big thing for us also, because we knew that that would be a great value add for our customers. And again, it applies in both ways, right? Because we want to, in essentia, the delivery service must work from merchants, but must also be able to work from the healers too.
Mm.
So after your consultation, if there's anything that needs to be delivered to you or brought to you, the healer requests a pickup, the driver comes, they pick it up and they deliver it to you. Again, just making a seamless transaction where a person is comfortable but still getting the services that they need, you know. And then the third core feature that I think was interesting for me, and this again came from Healer Insights, it was our Healer Connect. And our Healer Connect is a healer only platform where healers can speak and communicate with each other. And this could be for a variety of reasons.
Mm.
You're struggling with a client, you want some insights. It could just be for healers gathering and creating a community for themselves, you know. So the Healer Connect was a very big even some healers are globally and across the globe and they're unable to speak to other people. So I thought it would be a great way for healers to really connect and communicate with each other, so that they are also able to, again, share insights, share knowledge, and just help galvanize and unite spirituality across the country and across the continent and across the globe.
I love that because, look, we are not a collaborating people.
No.
If I'm being honest,
no.
We're not a let's share knowledge. So to take it a step further and to pave a way where we can safely rely on one another is also quite revolutionary, right? And I love the virtual consultation, and I'll tell you why, right? So I, in the history of me consulting with people, I've never just had a person come in and say, yeah, ngiyacela gogo. Do you know what I'm saying? It's usually we connect digitally on the phone and we speak as well. I like to do that with people just because, as you've said, people are very apprehensive and people are afraid. If I could say, I think people feel naked in front of healers, right? Because there's this conception that we can see everything and everything about your life, right?
And I think another part in that is, it's also a contentious part, right? It's when you're out and about and a healer comes to you and just starts telling you ndaba zakho. And I think the difficulty in that, right, is because I've seen it from both perspectives, is that for some healers, in that moment, whatever they will have to tell you could be banging so hard on their head that they aren't able to keep it in. But there are some healers that be like, yo, there's issues in your life. You should maybe try to get them checked out. They won't say anything to you, but they'll say, they'll point you in the right direction, right? And again, that little thing, I think that's alluding back to you saying that people feel sort of naked. It's those sort of interactions, those sort of moments really be like, oh, how do you know all of this?
It's scary for people. And I think as healers, it's always within our best interest to try and make people comfortable.
Yeah.
And to make people feel like they don't have to safeguard parts about themselves to us as well. I also find it very contentious when we walk up to people and just start speaking. I think, look, we are all educated in different ways as Izaboma. Where I come from, that is not so much a thing. But also I've seen how healers will use that to sort of, you know, corner you into something as well. Sometimes it's very general kinds of things being said, but because unendwe chisayo. But anyway, that's neither here nor here.
and it always feels like at that moment,
you know?
Hey, this makes sense. Hey, khaleki mona o khurwang pile.
Definitely. I suppose one of the big things here is ethics, right?
Yeah.
And ethics of practice. I wouldn't say that we lack ethics. There is definitely a huge there is a huge ethical blanket, but what I think sometimes gets into our ways is that we are very stuck in how we have been taught knowledge is to be disseminated, right? So that sort of stops us from being able to interact with people in different ways, in fear of violation of ethics, right? And of course, you would have thought about this quite vehemently, particularly in the socio-cultural context that we exist in right now, right? Where we have, you know, fake sangomas and fake this and that. In terms of ethics, right, and digitizing this, and digitizing something that some would say, you know, doesn't necessarily work digitally.
Yeah.
How have you navigated the ethics of that and balanced it out such that you are still working on the goal that you have set for yourself?
So in terms of the ethics, right, and that I think in its essence is and is always going to be the biggest challenge for us, right, is because like you're saying, healers are stuck in the way they've been taught. A lot of healers are evolving now and really are moving with the times, but the reality is that a lot of healers in the country won't sign up to the application because they are told by their guides that we don't do telephonic or digital or any kind of, the person must come here and that's how you help them. A person who can't come here, doesn't want to come here, you don't help them, you know. So there's those challenges. But I think from my perspective, what we did in developing the application is creating a platform that is robust enough to try and weed out whoever we may suspect as unethical practitioners.
Mm-hmm.
We have created a platform that is able to gather insights. And again, the platform is an insight and information gathering platform, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the more information we have and we feed into the platform, then the more it's able to learn and the more we're able to disseminate between the real and the not so real. I don't know, use fake, but not so real, you know?
Yes.
So again, it's just feeding more information to the platform. And again, really it's relying, not just relying, but really leveraging on relationships that I have, that individuals have with healers and merchants and so forth and so forth. you know, because it really does become easy to sign up to a platform and just scam people quickly. And, you know, but we relationships are really the strongest part, because that's at the end of the day is what this is. It's a relationship. If you're going to consult a traditional healer and they are going to speak on your life, your being and everything, it's a relationship. It's a very personal interaction in that moment. And establishing and keeping that boundary sacred is really what is key for us. So yes, we did look at that, but there definitely are some, we've taken account of all the posters that are found on street poles and walls and so forth of bring back lovers and whatnot. So
Anaconda brings 50K.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so there are means and ways that we have inputted into the application to defect and really try fend off the chance takers.
Of course.
The chance takers. But like everything, it's there will be some who get through the cracks, but we'll always be looking to weed out any negative things that there are. And again, like I said, for the people are our best source of feedback, you know. In the Healer Connect platform, if you as a healer feel something is untoward the person, you're able to drop us an email and say, hey, 1, 2, 3. If you're consulting with a certain healer as a patient and you're like, something seems off about you, you're able to send us an email and we'll look into that, you know. So it really is a matter of communication. We can do our best. At the end of the day, human intuition is always the best instinct to follow in your life. And again, working with people, because this is a platform for the people, we're going to essentially rely on you guys to continuously help us while we also use our technology to improve our services and our facilities.
Wonderful. I'm keen to hear your future plans, right? What do you have planned for us in the horizon? Because naturally, it seems, or rather, it's evident that a lot of work has gone into, you know, even protecting the privacy of users, you know, protecting the privacy of healers and so forth. What are the future plans? How are you hoping to change the world even more after this or through this?
The future plans are scary and wild, right? But they are, I'm also mindful of the application and the space that I'm in, because I never want to expose not just myself, but the people on the platform to untoward and unscrupulous characters, areas, et cetera, et cetera. It really is difficult to control with an application, but there are some levels of control that one can put in place to safeguard and really protect that. But in essence, our future plans definitely are to expand outside of South Africa. If we could get into the SADC region, that would be an amazing one. The rest of Africa, again, it'll be tackled in a case-by-case perspective, especially in terms of bringing on healers. I think bringing on users, it'd be more easier than bringing on healers, because healers need a lot more vetting than users do, than patients do. So really, that would be a strategic and slow strategic endeavor that we take in terms of bringing on healers, expanding in that region, in those other regions. But yeah, it's expanding outside of South Africa. But also, it really is to evolve the application from just a consultation and purchasing application. You know, the application, I feel like Ingoma can really revolutionize not just spirituality, but spiritual education and spiritual information. You know, we're sitting right now without a reference point as to where to go for African things. And I want Ingoma to be that central and focal point in spirituality. Ingoma should always be the go-to for anybody who wants anything spiritually related. And it should be the focal point for any black person, white person, Indian person, whatever. Any person of any color, ethnicity, or race, if they want to know information about spirituality, Ingoma should be the central place for them to go and the first thought for them to go to. And I think thirdly, maybe our future plans is really just to help spirituality grow. If we can see spirituality sitting in a place where it is at the forefront of the country's conversation, if spirituality is boldly and openly helping people and really taking its place in the healthcare and facilitation of people's healthcare and health needs, that would be a really great achievement for us, just to contribute a little bit to knowing that we are helping people get healthier in some sort of form. I think that would be a really great win for Ingoma. It would really take us to the... It would really be a stamp of approval for us that, you know what, in the little that we did, in our little couple of megabytes app, we were really able to help people get better, you know, and that's really what we're trying to do. If we can achieve that, then our goal would have been achieved with the application.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for,
thank you for your time
and sharing your vision. And sharing your, I suppose, your thoughts and your intellectual property as well. Super excited to see how Ingoma is going to grow and blossom within the African continent as
you
well.
You and I both.
look, it's super exciting, especially when I think about regions in Africa where there actually are celebrations and national days for African spirituality, right? So venturing into those will be super exciting, and I cannot wait to see what you're going to do with this. Thank you so much, Lebo.
Thank you so much, Zipo, for having me.
And maybe in 6 months' time, we can talk about how Ingoma's doing.
We can do a follow-up again.
And that is it from this edition of Gogo Have I Been Scammed. To share your story with us, please email us on gogohaveibeenscammed@gmail.com. That is gogohaveibeenscammed@gmail.com. Alternatively, you can reach out to us through the socials via Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and TikTok under the handle @gogohaveibeenscammed. That is under the handle @gogohaveibeenscammed. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on the Sowetan Live website under the podcast tab or across digital streaming platforms, that is Iono FM, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. You can listen to our other podcasts such as Sunday Times Politics Weekly, Taking the Rams by the Horns, 30 Years of Democracy, Business Day Spotlight, and Chisa Live. Gogo Have I Been Scammed is a Times Live production, and our producer is Demi Buzo. I have been your host, Gogo Zipodolamo. Thokozani. Tamakwini emakhosini.